So, Megan, it's been so long since we've done this that neither of us remember how to have a conversation about the 100.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard.
I mean, well, let me actually rephrase that because honestly, I could have conversations about the 100 with you for like, days on end. That's not the difficult part.
Yeah, it's the whole imaginary audience. Because at this point, honestly, who's listening? I don't know.
Oh yeah, they're all imaginary.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode of this new Netflix show called The Midnight Gospel. Have you heard of that?
No.
So it's the show creator is Pendleton Ward, who was the creator of Adventure Time.
Sorry, that does not sound like a real person, but
It
continue.
sounds very much like knowing his name and knowing his work, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, I'll trust you on that one.
But anyway, but it's this new show, it's this adult animated show, and it's like taken from the audio of this comedian's podcast. They're like these conversational podcasts. So the premise of the show is that like basically the main character kind of has like this futuristic space version of like a podcast where he interviews people.
Ooh.
So I just watched the first episode, which was good. But then at the end of it, he has this little like wrap up that he does where he's like, thanks so much for listening, whatever. And then goes like, and to, my one subscriber, and then says him by name, like, I live for you, man. You're why I get up every morning.
That's Angeline's mom at this point, Mama Cannon. Thank you
Yes.
so much for violating your existence. We love you to the moon and back.
Yes, exactly. Hello and welcome to A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan, and on a bit much, every few months when the world is ending, we get together, we watch a few episodes of the 100, and we talk about it in depth for your entertainment.
Yes. Also, important programming note that sharp-eared listeners will have figured out from that summary of our show is that we're not reading the books anymore.
Because they're bad. And it was no longer any fun to read them.
Yeah, I mean, we got through the first one and we had some laughs, talking
Some.
about it, but it was mostly just not fun. And there's part of me that just wants to read the rest of them to just know what happens because I'm very curious. But then there's another part of me that's like, life is too short to read books that I know are going to be bad and not entertaining.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's sort of like those are the two wolves battling inside me right now.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, how some movies are fun to watch because they're so bad, like that's their whole point, right? But like there are some movies that are just bad, and like you don't even have fun making fun of them. Like that's how I feel about these books. And so like I just can't do it. Like I'm trying to think of like a book. What's a book that we've read that's like was fun because it was so terrible? Like Maximum Ride. That's a train wreck, but it was like a fun train wreck, and also that was the one I read like in one sitting, and that was just it was the weirdest night of my life.
Yeah, no, that is fun. It's because it's so ridiculous in such a funny way.
Yeah.
Versus just like the writing being bad.
Yes, exactly.
So let's move on to the show then, which is good, even though sometimes it is bad too, and that's what makes it
Listen,
so
it's
excellent.
because they're giving 110%. Sometimes
Yes.
that's great. Sometimes it's like pull it back just a little bit, my friends. But you know that they can't. They're just giving it their all.
Yes. All right, so I am going to summarize the first two episodes that we watched. And I said that before I had the summary pulled up, like as though I was just off the top of my head going to do it.
Okay. We haven't done this in a while.
Okay, so first we watched season 2, episode 13, which is titled Resurrection. In the aftermath of the missile hitting Ton DC, the survivors are pinned down by a sniper shooting at anyone who moves amid the rubble. So Clark and Lexa try to find him. Octavia leads the grounders in trying to save survivors who are trapped under rubble, including Kane and Abby. In Mount Weather, the 47 shore up their defenses and keep back the soldiers, but when Maya is captured, they all escape through a trash chute and enlist the help of Maya's father and other rebels who help them hide. Clark kills the sniper with Lincoln's help, but seeing that he's not in a hazmat suit, she knows that her friends in the mountain don't have much time left. Season 2, episode 14 was called Bodyguard of Lies, which is a bad title.
Very bad.
Jaha, Murphy, and co. have to navigate a minefield in the desert, and when they make it through, they discover no utopian city on the other side, but a field of solar panels, amid which they find a drone and follow its path. Clark and the Grounder Army wait for Raven and Bellamy to disable the acid fog so they can approach the mountain, which, through some trial and error, they eventually do manage to disable the acid fog. Lexa kisses Clark, revealing that she cares for her, but Clark says she's not ready for that yet. Raven and Wook hook up, but Raven's clearly conflicted about her feelings, and Octavia grapples with whether she can forgive Clark for the missile strike. The army marches on Mount Weather unimpeded.
Nice. Those are a very good summary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So,
what do you got?
I got episode 215, which was Blood Will Have Blood, part 1. The Grounder and Ark Alliance arrive at Mount Weather and begin their three-pronged attack. Prong 1, Raven and Wick blow the turbines in the dam, cutting off the power to Mount Weather. Prong 2, Clark, Lexa, and the majority of their combined armies stand at the main door, blow the lock once the power is off and before the backup generator kicks in. Prong 3, Indra, Octavia, and their small team enter the Reaper tunnels and wait to escort the Grounder and Ark prisoners out of Mount Weather. Inside Mount Weather, Bellamy, Jasper, and Maya help to gather all of the scattered 44, which I think, I don't know. I feel like that they started referring to them as 44 instead of 47. I feel like three of them were sucked dry or something.
Yeah, within this, some of them died. And like, we don't know for sure how many or who, but
if I'm referring to a number, it's all the kids. Yeah. In Mount Weather. Anyway. However, the plan screeches to a halt when Lexa strikes a deal with Mount Weather, releasing the Grounder prisoners in exchange for their retreat. In the end, Raven and Wick are cornered by the mountain men. Octavia sacrifices her position as Indra's second to wait in the tunnels for Bellamy. Bellamy and the others are stranded inside Mount Weather, and Clark is left standing alone outside its door. Episode 216. Clark and Octavia are let into the mountain by Bellamy and the others, where they quickly infiltrate the command center. The mountain men imprison the 44, along with Abby, Kane, and the rest of the Arkers left in Ton DC, and methodically drain them of their bone marrow one by one under the threat of Clark. What? Because they're under the threat of the Arkers, or I think maybe I got that wrong. I'm so sorry. Clark tries to negotiate with Cage, even following through on her threat to kill his father. But when she realizes he won't ever let her people go, she and Bellamy pull the lever that irradiates the mountain, killing every Mount Weather resident inside. They all return to Camp Jaha, where Clark makes the decision to strike out on her own. Meanwhile, Jaha and Murphy reach the mysterious island the drone brought them to, splitting up when Murphy refuses to follow Jaha after he sacrifices one of their own. Murphy finds a bunker with ample supplies and a video of a distraught man talking of launch codes and a mysterious woman before shooting himself. Jaha finds a mansion with an AI named Allie inside, thanking him for bringing the missile that brought him to Earth to her. Ominously.
Ominous. All very ominous.
So yeah, that's what happened, kind of, more or less.
Yeah. So... a lot to talk about. A lot happens.
Oh my God, so
the end of a season, so it's very dramatic. I mean, why don't we just start with episode 13? I feel like there's going to be some things where we start talking about them, and then it's going to like exceed the boundaries of each episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine.
Yeah, but I think that's probably the easiest. thing to do. Which, I mean, episode 13 is all about the aftermath of the bombing of Ton DC, which, of course, Clark knew about, but let happen anyway. So all those people died, and, like, now that's on her conscience.
Add to the list.
Yes. the growing list of terrible things that Clark has been responsible for. Now we have this.
She has rot.
Yeah. And so we see a lot in this episode, a lot of what we see is characters dealing with that fact. So we have Clark herself trying to process it. But then we also have how Abby is reacting to it and how Octavia is reacting to it.
Yeah. Which they're basically like, I'll fuck with you.
Yeah.
They're angry. Yeah. I mean, to be fair. Kind of justifiably. And Abby's basically just like, I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. she basically pulls that one on Clark.
Yeah, and the most dramatic, I'm not mad. Most, yeah. Like, high stakes, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Exactly. So I think we've all been there. Our parents, we've disappointed our parents. It's not a good feeling. Most of it hasn't been from, you know, having a hand in a bunch of murder, but mm-hmm. You know, relativity. But yeah, so that sucks. You hate to see Abby and Clark not on the same team. It's very sad. But I don't know why, but I always love when Octavia's just like, fuck you to someone. She's like, I'm never talking to you again. She's like definitely like just always ready to cut people off. No matter what.
Right. I mean, Octavia is like very sort of stubborn in certain ways, right? Like she will form her opinion on something and feel very strongly about it and be rather rigid about mm-hmm. it, which is, you know, gonna guide her storyline in future seasons. But but yeah, I mean, because like basically she figures out what happened, she figures out that Clark must have known. And is just kind of like, is basically like, we are over, like, professionally. Like, I will help you get Bellamy out of that mountain, and then I will never speak to you again or forgive you. And, you know, she has, at one point, has this conversation with Indra, where she's like, Clark knew, and so did your commander, and they still let all those people die. They were willing to let us die. Like, that's terrible. And Indra is just like, so nonchalant of like, she's the commander. She made a tactical choice in order to save the most of her people. Get over it.
Yeah, like that's, them's the wars, man. Like that's
right. How it works. It's like, you want to be a warrior in this society? This is the kind of shit you got to sign up for.
Exactly. Like all of the, I feel like all of the grounders have to just be so exhausted by the ARC people at this point. Like, you don't know how to do anything. You're basically babies just rambling around down here. And we, like, for some reason have become responsible for you. And you guys are just all so soft.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something that I thought was interesting and was good was that, like, so the beginning we have Abby being, like, horrified by what Clark has done. And so for a lot of this conversation, she's like stuck under a bunch of rubble, which you were right, that did happen. Kane got covered in rubble. And just talking with Kane about what happened, basically. And Kane is much more on Clark's side. Like, he is like, yeah, she made a sacrifice and that's terrible. That's a terrible weight to bear. But like, you have to understand why she did that. And basically through their conversation, like, I thought it was interesting that we had this kind of reversal of roles, right? Of like, not that long ago, we had Clark being horrified with her mother because she knew that Abby was the one who was responsible for her father's death. And then we have this kind of reversal of roles where now Abby is like horrified by what Clark is capable of or is willing, the hard decision she's willing to make. And then by the end of this episode, that's kind of made more explicit through her conversation with Kane, where Kane is like, yeah, you're right. This is a horrible thing she did. It's just as horrible as floating someone for stealing medicine or, you know, letting 300 people suffocate so that there was enough oxygen on the Ark. And, you know, Abby kind of realizes like, oh yeah, like we had to be hardcore like this up on the Ark too. And that's kind of like, I think that the disconnect between the grounders and the sky people is that like the sky people did live that kind of brutal and like sacrificial lifestyle when they were on the Ark, right? Like they were willing to let people die in order to, you know, have their society continue on. But now that they're on the ground and they're not like restricted in the same ways, they have become a lot more idealistic. Like they're all like, well, now we don't have to be like that anymore. And everyone on the ground is kind of like, actually, no, you still do.
Right. It's like, life has always been this brutal. Like, yes. You thought you're just going to come down here and it's going to be Garden of Eden. You're always going to lay around in the grass and eat fruit and be happy. Like, nah, son, it's not what's going to happen.
Right. It's like, it's still... Can you hear my neighbor fucking weed whacking right now?
Yeah. I was wondering what that was. I thought maybe somebody was vacuuming. But yes, I agree.
So fucking loud. I have things to say, but like, it's going to be such a pain to listen to. Oh, stop. Okay, I got to say it quick. So it's like they came down to the ground and they're like, yeah, great, Garden of Eden, right? But it's like, no, you still have the same problems. Like there's still like limited resources and there's still like political things to consider and like how, you know, decisions to make about how you're going to order your society that all have those same kind of life or death stakes. Like it doesn't change just because like, yeah, there's more sort of resources and opportunity when you're not on a space station anymore, but it's like that doesn't make those same problems go away. It just makes them different.
Exactly. Like it's just the continuance of this idea of like yeah, how to rebuild now that they're down there. It like makes me think of when Bellamy and Clark had to decide what to do with Murphy when they were like on that cliff or whatever. Yeah. They're like, okay, do we kill him? Like, do we, you know, we can't bring him back here. Like he's, right. They thought he was a murderer. He wasn't, I don't think at that point, but you know,
he was, at that point, he was an attempted murderer.
Yes. Attempted murderer. That was just a practice run. Uh-huh. But yeah. And they were like, yeah, they had to decide and they still like made a choice that like should have killed him. Right. You know, Murphy escaped right once again, but anybody else would have killed them. And so like, yeah, so it's the same dilemmas, just a different setting.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mount Weather, because in this episode, the way that the remaining sky people down there, whatever number of them there are, like fought back, like tricked and fought back against the mountain men was so fucking cool.
So cool. Like that was perfect. That was great. Which like I love how it also felt like, you know, they're a bunch of scrappy criminal kids, right? Very much like in the vein of who they are. Like that bucket trick. Like it makes me just think that they had learned that like on the Ark, that they had done that before. Like
yeah, it no, just, I mean, it's yeah. it's so perfectly represented, this, like, scrappy criminal kid aspect, but also the fact that, like, they are incredibly smart and self-sufficient, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's, like, they had these, and it was so well done, because it's, like, first we just see a scene of them, like, basically barricading the doors to the room that they're in, and, like, gathering up weapons, and, like, preparing, right? And then just, like, offhand, like, Monty makes some, like, mention of, like, okay, and so-and-so is going to get the buckets of water or whatever. And then in the next scene, when the soldiers actually come and attack the room, and it's, like, they get the door down and then toss in these, like, smoke grenades, you know? And as a viewer, you're, like, oh, no, like, they had, you know, they were going to fight back or whatever, but now, like, this, you know, they're all just going to be knocked out by this, you know, chemical, and their whole plan is like ruined. And then the soldiers walk in and all the kids are like collapsed on the ground. And then the one soldier who has a name, Emerson, notices the buckets of water and realizes that they've plunged the smoke grenades in the buckets of water. So they haven't, the chemical hasn't been released. And then they all just, all the kids just get up and start fucking stabbing people. And it's so cool. I got chills.
So cool. And like, man, that is some like real looking violence for a CW show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, like very well choreographed, like damn. And yeah, and like going along with that same idea and, you know, like how much they've grown since being on the ground and like how self-sufficient they are, like when I think, I can't remember if it's Jasper asks Monty, I think it's Jasper asks Monty, like, how long do you think we can hold them off? And Monty goes, as long as we have to. Like, they're just, yeah, they're like, they've been in survival mode for like literally so long that like, they're just, yeah, they're like, we will do what it has, what we have to, and we will survive. And like, this is our life now, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just that gave me chills a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is like, it's so sad.
Constantly everything that's ever happened to these children.
Exactly. They're just constantly in situations where it's like, well, we're gonna fight our hardest until we reach the next small bit of safety or hope, and then something will threaten that, so then we will just repeat the process. Also in this episode we kind of discover that there are people who live in Mount Weather who aren't totally on board with everything that's going on, besides Maya.
Yeah, which I feel like could have been introduced way sooner. It would have made things a lot more interesting in Mount Weather. So, like, I could take this one.
Yeah.
So, Maya, she gets, I think Jasper and Bellamy, it's hard. It's like there are so many different combinations of these kids. But, you know, she gets some of them to her father to like help them out, and we learned that her mother and father were like revolutionaries, basically, who didn't take the blood treatments, who were against it, who thought that they shouldn't live off of like native blood to survive, and it killed her mother. She like refused to take the blood treatment, so she basically died for what she believed in. And so, you know, that gives some backstory, that gives a little bit more reasoning why Maya is so willing to help them. And her father come up with this plan where they're going to hide all of the kids with, like, sympathetic families who, you know, are against killing these children for their blood marrow. So that's what they do. And it's like, this has never come up before, this idea that some people aren't cool with it. Like, so it's an interesting idea, but I just wish it had been more, you know, braided throughout this season.
Yeah, no, it definitely felt kind of rushed. Right, like, why would Maya not have mentioned this fact before, that like there are people who don't agree with it, that her parents were some of those people, that her mother died because she refused to, you know, use the grounder's blood? And like, it kind of felt like they gave all of this characterization to Maya all of a sudden to make you like her more or like her family more before they killed her off.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, because, you know, we know all of Mount Weather is going to die. So it's like, we have to feel even worse, right? We got the whole scene with Bellamy where there are kids. We're like, oh, that's no good. And then we're like, and we kind of like Maya. And it was like, oh, we like Maya more. And also, like, apparently there are a bunch of people here who like don't agree with all the evil things that are happening. So like, yeah, just setting this up to knock us down, basically.
Yeah. Anything else?
I just want to say, ouch, when Jasper says, oh, I guess Finn got his peace talk. So I was just like, he doesn't know. I forgot none of them know that Finn is dead. And it's just so bad.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, you're right. I didn't even think of that.
God, that was horrible. And Bellamy's like something like that. And I was like, oh.
Bellamy's just like, I'm not going to tell you. We're not going to go through that. Focus. Jesus Christ, yeah. Yeah, that is.
along the same lines, I also just want to point out that we lost absolutely no main characters in the missile attack, which is, like, very unlike the 100. Like, you know, if Kane didn't have a better role to play moving forward, like, he definitely would have been the sacrificial lamb. Like, nobody important died in that missile.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to episode 14, then. We see Jaha and Murphy again. Actually, I do really love the way that this episode starts, is they're just walking through the desert, and one of the people with them is telling these jokes that are all based around, like, stuff happening on the ground, and I loved it. I was so into it. I feel like I distinctly remember making similar jokes, like, making puns about, like, the mountain men or the grounders, like, when first watching this show. Mm-hmm. So that was great, but then he gets blown up by a landmine, and then that's, like, what they're dealing with for most of the episode.
That is a great opening. That's a classic 100 opening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not much to do with the landmines, or, like, you know, Jaha's still, like, it's the test of fate or what fate, right, or whatever. Again, and it was just, like, again,
the weird, like, religious fervor that he has. And then they get to the end, and it's like, oh, there's nothing. There's no city. But then they find a drone, and they follow it, like, yeah, into the ocean.
Yeah, that was basically their whole deal, the whole
thing. Yeah, yeah.
The kind of the way that this episode starts for the rest of the people is they're in Tondi's D, the missile, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Octavia's like, I'll fuck with you. And Lex is like, want me to kill her? Lex is like, no. Please don't kill Octavia. That's not what I want. And Lex is like, I'm going to kill her. And so she sends her bodyguard of lies.
Tondi. Yeah.
To kill Octavia because she knows, you know, about the missile, and Lex is like, you know, if anyone finds out, it'll break the alliance, basically. So, you know, justifiable reasons to be concerned, justifiable reasons for murder, maybe not. Clark thinks no. So she basically just, like, holds a gun to the bodyguard's head, like, this is not happening. So she saves Octavia's life without her knowing about it, which is pretty cool. But I just like how Lex's solution to most problems is, like, murder.
Well, they literally, so, like, after that scene you just described, Clark goes to Lex's, like, tent and confronts her, and she, like, I wrote down this quote because, like, this is what they said verbatim. Clark said, "You can't just kill everyone you don't trust." And Lex replied, "Yes, I can."
Also peak 100. But then Clark has that moment where she, like, like, gets all up in Lex's face and, like, backs her up against the table. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah.
So much sexual tension. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do you want to talk about that already?
I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to save it. It's just because it's, like, I have so much to say about it.
Okay. Well, let's get through other stuff in this.
Okay.
Episode then. I guess the rest of the plot basically is, like, Bellamy, with the remote help of Raven and Wick, has to shut down the acid fog, and he finds the place and he figures it out, and they tell him what to do, and it seems like, woohoo, we did it. And then that's when Raven and Wick hook up. And then, like, after they've, like, you know, sent the flare so the army starts marching, Bellamy realizes, like, wait, actually we didn't. Like, my communications have been cut off. They've been watching me. Like, this definitely didn't happen. But then he still gets away because he just blows up the whole freaking room and the soldiers who are chasing him. So they did solve that problem, which is good. But then, like, at, you know, near the end of this episode, we see, like, Raven just kind of, like, shutting down and not responding to Wick and just being, like, you know, again, makes you think about, like, yeah, how long ago did Finn die? Like, not that long ago. She's clearly conflicted about this.
Have you seen Wick? I don't know why I'm so attracted to to this boy, but I am. No, I mean, he's like the perfect combination of like goofy and also handsome and also tall and a little thick. Like, that's like, I love it. And so, but like, and also, you know, afterwards when he was like, you know, I'm in, like, I want this if you want this, right. But like, you know, I'm not gonna play any games, like, you need to figure this out, basically. And I was just like, damn, son, like, self-respect is so goddamn sexy. Like, it looks good on you. I just love, like, so much. And like, can we just take it aside? I thought for sure he died, like, in the damn scene, because I can't remember what happened to him.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he, I don't think he has a long plot after this, no, but I feel like, it's maybe just kind of off screen, like, he's just, like, stops being a relevant character,
which is a crime because he's like, he shot to like my favorites list so quickly. Mm-hmm. But I felt Bellamy so hard when they were like talking all that science at him. He was like, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah,
I was like, it felt like if you were trying to give me instructions. Please. I have never read an entire Wikipedia article in my entire life. Like, please,
oh my god,
help me out.
Also, well, okay, do you have anything else that isn't related to Clark and Lexa? Because I have one comment I want to make before we get to that.
Not really.
Okay, so now we can move on to talking about Clark and her feelings, which early in the episode, she's in Lexa's tent, and she's just kind of like, spiraling. She's just like, what if this doesn't work out? Like, what if this part was wrong? What if we miscalculated this? What if they can't do that part? Like, it's all gonna fall apart and everyone's gonna die. Like, and you know, Lex is kind of like, you gotta calm down, this isn't helpful. And Clark says, like, what if I was the one who sent Bellamy in there, and then like, I'm the one who causes him to die. And Lexa says, like, oh, you really care about him. And Clark goes, I care about all of them. And I'm like, yeah, deflection.
Yeah. Like, bitch, listen. Like, you care so much. You love him. Just accept it.
Yes.
Oh, right. Ugh. But whatever. I'm still angry. If they don't get together in this last season, I'm gonna write some letters. I'm just telling you right now.
Anyway. But then also later, Lexa kisses Clark, which, and Clark is definitely into it at first before she, like, pulls away and is like, I'm not ready to be with someone like that yet. Which he did say yet, which, like, wow, very important single syllable word. But also, like, is this the first gay moment on this show?
I think it is, because I know, like, Miller is gay, but I don't think that has come up yet.
Right.
I really do think it is. Okay, I'm going to talk about for a long time about it.
Yes, no, really please, like, please do.
Okay, so it was very important, the timing that when this episode aired, because it was 2015. I was in the closet. It was like, I think it was before the gay marriage was legalized throughout the United States. And like, and, you know, like, the sexual tension had been kind of happening between Clark and Lexa. But, like, me watching it at that time, I think it was, like, 19, like, I was convinced that that would never happen. I was convinced, like, it was just queer baiting, you know, it seemed like so much of that. This was, like, a few months after The Legend of Korra ended, where it was, like, you know, it was, you know, the writers were, like, explicitly, like, yes, they're together, but, you know, it's a kids' show, quote-unquote. So, like, they never kissed or anything. And, like, so I was, like, it's going to be that, you know, if anything. Like, that's the best-case scenario. Like, things like this don't happen on TV. Like, I had never seen that happen on TV. And, like, you know, also, I thought I was straight for most of my life, so not, you know, taking in a lot of queer media. But, like, this is pretty mainstream, I would say, the 100. Yeah. And so, like, I just thought for sure it was not going to happen. So, like, when this kiss happened, I was shocked. I was, like, it rocked me to my core. And, like, and it was so important to me because, like, I love Clark so much. And she's a main character. And she is bi. Like, are you fucking kidding me? That's that's incredible. Yeah. Like, and she was, and she's like awesome and badass and like, and has, you know, complexity and shit. and like, it wasn't a big deal, like, you know, in the show. Like, but to me, it was like everything. And that was just such like a validating moment for me and my existence. Like, that, like, I will never forget how that felt. Like, that was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that, like, and I'm, later we will certainly talk about the way that this show handles, you know, gay and lesbian plot lines and characters, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But I feel like this moment was, like, just almost perfectly executed. Because, like, you're right, this was, like, this mainstream show that up until this point, like, almost at the end of season two, had, as far as we know, no confirmed gay or queer characters, right? Mm-hmm. And it was this very mainstream show. But it's like we had already established, just like you said, like we knew so much about Clark and about her character. And by this point, we also know a lot about Lexa and about her character. Mm-hmm. And then, like, once you have this revelation, you can, like, read more potentially into things that we've heard about her past. And again, right, that it was like this kiss was clearly supposed to be a surprise, right? Like, it was supposed mm-hmm. to be surprising that Lexa felt that way about Clark. But again, not because she was a woman. Like, that's not even brought up. Clark's reaction is like, has nothing to do with that. It's just like, I can't handle this right now in this situation. But like, so I feel like that was just pulled off so well.
Seriously, though, because, like, you know, another show could have taken that in a direction where it's like, okay, gay panic now, right? Like,
right. Or, like, it could have been, like, gay panic, or it could have just been, like, because it's also, like, the show doesn't then become, like, self-congratulatory about it exactly. or anything, you know? Like, it's just part of the world and part of the characters just completely organically.
Yes. And, like, and I just love that, like, and, like, you know, it's okay, like, I, you know, storylines about, like, discovering your sexuality, cool, too. But, like, just see her and, like, to, yeah, not have her freak out that it was a woman. Like, she knows mm-hmm. that she's attracted to women. She knows that she's attracted to men. Like, that was just so cool. Like, yeah. I can't express, like, how important that was mm-hmm. to my self-identity. Like, that was just, like, so cool. And I remember reading something about, like, you know, behind the scenes, like, one of the directors was basically, like, you know, they asked him about this, and he was basically, like, you know, in the future, you know, it's, like, the apocalypse, but, you know, some things are better. You know? And I was, like, oh, that makes me so happy.
That's nice. Yeah. There's one nice thing.
Yeah, like, no one freaks out about gay people now. Like, literally, there's, like, no homophobia, like, in this entire series whatsoever, and I love that.
Yeah, no, like, that's such a great, like, if you're gonna have a, like, speculative fiction anyway, like, if this mm-hmm. is gonna be in the future, like, some number of centuries, it's like, yeah, just get rid of it. Like, just have that be completely normalized.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, like, what a power couple. Like, what, how great.
Yep.
And they're so good together, too, right? It's not like they just took two random women and mashed their lips together. It was like they have chemistry, and they set it up.
Have this, yeah, this relationship that's been developing, this, like, trust and affection for each other that has been growing over this whole season.
Yeah, because, like, sometimes they'll have, some shows will have this, and they'll just be, like, shock and awe, right? Like, oh my gosh, like, she's gay? Like, what? Yeah. But it was just, like, so, it was on purpose. It was just so on purpose.
Yeah.
So much. Oh, just like kudos, 100. Like, you're such a good fucking show sometimes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, like, that just kind of leads into the, like, scene where they're all, like, marching to Mount Weather, and, like, you get to see, like, Lexa and Clark, like, marching together, and you see, like, Indra, and you see Octavia, and, like, Octavia, like, opens her mouth, and just, like, this primal, like, roar comes out, and I get goosebumps every time I see her do that, because it's just, like, so fucking good. Yeah. And I just, yeah, like, my note for that is, like, this is such a good fucking show. Like, it just gets me so hyped, and, like, it just, because it's all of these, like, badass women who are just, like, fleshed out and like great characters, and like they get to have power and they get to be leaders and they get to learn and grow, and it's just so good to them.
It really is. It's like, it's almost like, and it's so good because it's not, again, it's not like self-congratulatory, like it just is.
It's,
and
not that like last something scene so, in Endgame where they're like,
in
oh,
fucking Avengers
there,
yes,
yeah,
no, the worst.
Was that Joss Whedon who did that? I can't remember. I think it was the Russo brothers. Whatever.
I think it was Russo brothers, but who knows?
Who knows? Like, fuck you so much.
Yes, no, exactly. That it is like, it just feels completely natural to have, yeah, like, you know, all of these women characters that are so fleshed out and so, like, just, it doesn't have any problems. Like, it's almost like you don't even notice it until you step back and think like, oh, wait a minute, it's so hard to find this in other media. Like, right. But it's just like, it's so natural for this show and this story.
And I think part of that is that it's not, you know, they're not powerful women, like, in like, comparison to men. It's not like, oh, look how great women are and look how terrible men are. Like, all the men, like, are incompetent and, like, cruel. Like, no, they have really great, like, male characters, too. And they, like, respect the fuck out of each other. And yeah, it's just, like, it's just so good.
So, you want to move on to 15?
Yes.
Okay. A lot happens here.
Thank you so much.
So it starts with Bellamy returning to the harvest chamber and releasing Echo. So we get to see Echo again. And then also the other grounders, and explaining this plan of like, okay, we're all going to release, you know, we're going to release all of the grounders so that then you and all of the sky people can fight together from the inside while the other, you know, armies fight from the outside and we can all escape. But then that's completely ruined by Cage publicly announcing like what's going on, that they're taking the bone marrow and that it does work. And then basically calling on his people to turn on each other, essentially, to like, you know, release the sky people that they're hiding, or to like go hunt after your neighbors who are probably hiding some sky people.
Right? Which, like, you know, a cool strategy idea, but nothing really comes of it. Unless I'm forgetting something.
So we get some scenes where soldiers are, like, going into people's apartments. So, there's one where Jasper and Maya were hiding. And, you know, they come in and interrogate them. And then they basically are like, there's people here, like, you know, reveal them or we're going to shoot you. And then Jasper, like, jumps out. He's like, no, I can't let you die. You know, like, we're here, we'll go with you, whatever. And then the guard shoots the couple anyway. And I didn't, like, totally understand that choice. Like, logically, in that moment, it's like, why would you kill more of your own people when you've accomplished what you came here to do? Like, I feel like that was maybe just a move to make them seem more evil, you know?
Yeah, and, like, it was funny because when Jasper came out, I was like, oh, Jasper, they're gonna die anyway. But I was like, oh, sooner than I remembered. But, like, no, yeah, I agree. There's not really a good reason to do that, especially when it doesn't feel like there are a lot of Mount Weather people, you know?
Exactly.
They probably have to have, like, a pretty tight population to stay, you know, sustainable or whatever.
Right.
So it's like, it doesn't feel, you know, in the interest of their survival to kill these people.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I also think probably it was just to make them be more evil. But like, you know, yeah, I just didn't see any like repercussions. Like, I didn't see any Mount Weather people turn on each other. Like, I think the soldiers would have done that anyway, because they know that they're hiding people. Like, that wasn't news to the soldiers.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think basically it just made it so things, there was more pressure, things took a little bit more time because they're like, you know, moving around and trying to hide. And then like in that whole shuffle, guards, and we never find out like why this happens, I don't think, but the guards figure out like, oh, they're hiding in the harvest chamber. So they go there and, or maybe, I don't know why that happened. Because it happened before they made the deal with Lexa. So, like, it wasn't like they were going there to release the grounders, but they figured it out. So, they basically, they just capture all of the 44, whatever they are, except for, like, Bellamy, Jasper, Monty, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, take them down to the dungeon to aggressively pull out all their bone marrow. But yeah, other than that, it didn't have a huge impact.
And also, okay, so, you know, the plan going in is to get the grounders and the 44 out and then pretty much, like, leave them out and alone. Like Clark makes a point. She's like, okay, we're going to kill their soldiers, kill their leaders, like, if we have to, and then we leave, like, the rest of them alone. Like, they're innocent, you know? We're going to keep them alive. But it's also, like, wouldn't they die without outside blood anyway? Like, just eventually? Like,
yeah.
That's never brought up.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of always a part of this, right? Is that it's, like, Mount Weather, much like the arc before it, is running out of time, right? Things are breaking that they can't repair. So it's, like, they have to find a way to survive on the ground, or they're going to die out eventually, just slower. Although, again, like, if they made an alliance with the Sky People, they could maybe work that out. But, yeah, but I thought, so, like, we have that scene where Clark gives the speech where she talks about how it's just a rescue mission. Like, we're just going to kill the soldiers, get our people out, like, get in, get our people, and go. And then, like, Lexa kind of seems to notice that, like, her, like, generals are kind of bristling at this. Like, they're maybe, like, not so into that idea. And then she gives this whole speech about, like, the mountain has cast a shadow on this forest for too long. Like, they've, you know, tortured and killed us and turned us into monsters. Like, that ends today. Like, we will spare the innocent, but blood must have blood. And so it seems very much like Lexa and her people are very much about, like, yeah, we're going to get revenge. And yeah, sure, we won't kill the kids or whatever, but, like, we're going to get revenge on these people who've done horrifying things to us for, you know, as long as we can remember.
Yeah, like, basically, like, they're oppressors since this, it seems like, since this whole thing began. So, like, I think, they have very different stakes. Like, they're an alliance, but they're, like, you know, your people were just captured. Like, maybe a few of them have died, but, like, you know, this has been, you know, decades of this kind of cruelty and, you know, mistreatment. And so they have, like, a lot more at stake, basically.
Exactly. And I think that that is, like, kind of reflected in the choices that Dante, the former president, makes in this episode. Because, like, basically they, Cage goes to his father and is just kind of like, what do I do? Like, we're kind of fucked. What do I do? And tells him the situation of, like, yeah, the whole Grounder army is outside our gates and, like, we can't stop them because we don't have the Acid Fog anymore. And even though Dante has done things that have been helpful to the Sky People, at this point, he is, like, he basically gives Cage the key to preventing this by suggesting that he make this trade with Lexa, basically. He make this deal, which, like, I feel like is rooted in the fact that it's, like, not only do they maybe think of the Grounders as, like, quote-unquote savages of just people who are gonna, like, kill for fun or whatever, but the fact that it's, like, he knows what he's done to them. Like, he knows how mad they're gonna be just as a result of the suffering that they've experienced. So it's, like, you know, he just expects, like, of course they're gonna kill all of us. Like, they're just gonna get revenge, like, because of the horrible things we've done. So, like, then he is willing to essentially abandon helping the 40, however many, because he's like, well, otherwise the Grounders are going to kill all of us.
Yeah, I did not think of that. That's a good point. Yeah, Clark may have her ideals, but yeah. Whew. Which, like, okay, but also this man's morals seem to change whenever the plot needs them to.
I mean, that's fair.
You know, I could see an argument where it's like, you know, he's morally flexible. I think that's true. You know, we've seen that in other things. But it's also kind of like, you know, yeah, he only helps them when it's convenient. He only, you know, gives them up when it's convenient.
Yeah, I mean, like most characters, he is generally trying to do what's best for his people while kind of trying to be moral, but like, that's not his first priority.
Yeah.
Yeah, so also, like, I felt like an important moment before everything went to shit was that Lexa invited Clark to go back to Polis with her.
Yeah.
Which, again, is just, like, this excellent moment of, like, bonding and a potential future. And the fact that Lexa was like, you'll understand more about our society. Like, you'll change the way you think about us if you come to our capital city. And then, you know, like, 20 minutes later. And actually, really similar thing happened, too, is, like, Indra, like, said to Octavia, like, you're one of us now. Like, you are. She said, like, you're Octavia from Tree Crew. Like, you've proven yourself. You're one of us. And then Lexa betrays them, and all of those bonds are just broken.
Which is such a good plot twist, too, because you don't see it coming at all.
No,
blindsided.
Well, it's a great plot twist, because you're right, you don't see it coming. But I feel like the amount of information we have now makes it kind of incongruous with Lexa's whole speech at the beginning, right? Of like, she essentially made this deal so that, yeah, it was just a rescue mission. They just got their people out and then retreated. Like, what happened to this whole army's feeling of, like, blood must have blood? We have to, you know, have retribution for what they have done. Like, I don't understand why there wasn't more pushback against that. Especially because it's like, yeah, if they had gone in and actually had this fight, there would have been losses, right? Like, they would have lost, you know, members of the Grounder Army, but I still think they overwhelmingly would have won. Like, they definitely had the numbers and the, you know, weapons and capability to pacify the entire mountain. So it's like, I don't totally understand why Lexa made that decision.
That's true. Like, were things breaking bad? Like, was the plan breaking down? I thought it was kind of working, right?
So basically, the plan was breaking down a little bit. They were supposed to, like, set off the detonation so that the lock would explode, right? Mm-hmm. But then there were these shooters that Lexa took some people to go deal with. And then they did end up blowing up the lock. I don't know whether or not Lexa knew that, but I don't ultimately think that should have changed her decision. Lincoln ends up just manually shooting it with an arrow and it blows up. So it's like, they can get in. They've succeeded. Like, their plan can move forward. But then Lexa comes down with the shooters and is like, no, we made a deal. Don't breach the door that you just opened. So, like, if she thought that they couldn't get the lock open, I could maybe see if she was like, oh, this plan isn't going to work. But, like, as soon as she got down there and saw, like, yeah, the door is open, I feel like she could have just been like, oh, no, actually, we could totally take you guys down. Like, go ahead.
That's true, because, like, you know, yeah. I didn't think about that, but you're right. Because, like, yeah, her speech is like, you know, they've cast a shadow. Like, how do they know they're not just going to start this whole, you know, capturing Grounders thing all over again?
Right. Well, so I think that the deal that they made was basically that it's like, okay, well, you get to keep the Sky People, so you can take all their bone marrow out. You guys can all become, like, able to come above ground.
Oh, right.
And then, because I think in the next episode, Indra mentioned something about, like, oh, the nature of the truce is that we can't go to the mountain anymore. So basically, I think it was just like, hey, we'll give you your people, leave us alone forever now, and we'll leave you alone. But also, I'm like, but why would you trust that they'll leave you alone? Like, once they come up to the ground, they will, again, be more technologically advanced than you. So they'll be able to probably fuck you up in ways that are really difficult to circumvent. And they're going to need freaking resources, too. Like, so I feel like they're also going to be a problem in the future.
Yeah. So, like, by betraying your one ally, you now made two enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't make sense. You're right. See, I mean, what we're talking about, where sometimes the show is so good, and other times you're like, what?
I mean, yeah. I feel like if we'd been given a little bit more information or a little bit more reason as to why, like, oh, you know what, actually it's hopeless. Like, that it would be better to not take the risk of a battle versus, like, just making this alliance. Like, I feel like they could have made really minor changes to make this fully work. And, like, I still think that it's, like, it is a good plot twist. And it, you know, is an important part of the show. But there are some holes in it if you look at it too closely.
Yeah. But, oh man, that part where, like, Indra tells Octavia, like, you are no longer my second. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that sucked. Because it's like, yeah, she's not going to just leave her brother in there. Like, it's Octavia, it's Bellamy. Like, they're not going to do that. And, you know, what's his face? Jackson? Was that his name? The doctor?
The doctor guy? Yeah.
Is like, you know, Octavia, like, we have to go home. Like, just come home. And she says, I have no home. It's like, yeah. So good. Yes, yeah. Like, her brother is her home. Like, it's, I just love their relationship so much. And, yeah, and, like, same here. Like, if my sister was, like, stuck in a prison and everyone else went home, like, I'd be like, no, I'm safe.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically the end of the episode. I mean, similarly, I guess Lincoln is, like, not cool with retreating. He is like, no, I don't care that you're my people. Like, this is morally wrong, and we have to help save Octavia and her friends.
Yeah, which he's always been, like, the idealistic one, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he has always been more sort of guided by morals than by people, which is unusual in this show.
Yes, very unusual. All right, we'll go to the end. The end
final
of the end.
Final episode of the season. Do you want to just get... well... Do you want to talk about Jahan Murphy now, or do you want to wait till the end, since that is the last thing that happens?
Let's wait till the end.
Okay. So yeah, then basically, like, Bellamy, Jasper, and Monty meet up. Oh, and Maya meet up with Clark and Octavia down in the mines. They all get to hug each other. It's so cute. And they haven't seen each other in so long. And, you know, are basically like, okay, How are we going to solve this? And they split up so that Bellamy, Monty, and Clark go to try and find Dante to get his help. And then they end up going to the control room and negotiating with Cage. Whereas Octavia, Jasper, and Maya go first to, like, get more oxygen for Maya because she's out. And then decide to... just themselves go kill Cage because they believe basically that that will stop things, I guess.
Yeah.
It seems like a plan they haven't thought all the way through.
Yeah, but they're, like, kind of grasping at straws at this point, which, can you blame them? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Everything got jumbled up so quickly.
I cannot, yeah. So they kind of have these two concurrent plans going on, but without knowledge of each other. Okay, so Clark, basically, like, they get into the control room so they can have cameras on everything. They see what's going on. They see this extremely gruesome scene in the dorm room where they're, like, taking people, sucking all their bone marrow out, and then tossing them down the trash chute, including now Abby and Kane have been caught. So she tries to negotiate with him, and she's like, you know, I have your dad, and I'll kill him. And Cage is just kind of like... fine. Like, just kind of like, you know, Dante is like, don't, you know, don't change anything, like, stay the course. And so then Clark follows through, like, she kills him to show Cage that, like, she means business. And then, you know, she's like, okay, stop doing this, let my people go, or, like, I'll just irradiate this whole place.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess Cage just must have thought that, like, they could get to them and stop them before that happened. Because I'm like, at this point, she has nothing to lose. Yeah. You know? It's like, if she doesn't do that, you will kill all of the people that she loves. So, like, yeah. Why would you believe that she would not, like, you can't call her bluff on this. Like, she will do this. She has nothing to lose.
Yeah, like, so, literally, like, the only reason she's not doing it is because she's trying not to be evil. Like, there's no drawbacks for her for doing this.
Yeah. And, like, she, so, like, this, over these few episodes, we've had a couple of different iterations of this, like, idea about who the good guys are. Like, I think in the like, episode 13, Abby says to Clark, like, try and remember that we're supposed to be the good guys. And then in this one, Clark says, like, we're the good guys here, not you. Like, you're the one who are killing our people, whatever. By the end of this, they give up that idea, though. Clark is like, actually, maybe that's not a concept that is relevant here.
Yeah. And, yeah, you have to agree. Because they're both doing terrible things to keep their people alive. Like, that's just kind of what humans do.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but, yeah. I did like, you know, Bellamy saying, like, they never would have stopped. You know, as justification right. to kill them. But I'm pretty sure they use that exact same terminology when talking about, you know, Clark and her people. Like, the Mount Weather at some point was like, they'll never stop. Yeah. Like, we have to stop
them. Yeah, exactly. I think it's Dante who's like, they're never going to stop trying to get their people out.
Yeah.
And we're never going to stop trying to kill them.
Yep. So it's just, like, such good use of, like, yeah, of those lines to, like, show exactly, like, yeah, everyone just has their own agenda, trying to protect their own people, doing terrible things.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So, yeah, so it basically it comes to this moment where it seems like everything is falling apart. Like, they have Emerson trying to knock down the door to the control room, who's like, if he gets in, gonna come in and shoot them all. Monty, which, like, I thought Monty's part in this was interesting. Because, I mean, like, it's because of him... He was able to, like, you know, do the computer good enough that they could, you know, irradiate everything. But he doesn't pull the lever. You know, he says, like, okay, I've made it, so this is an option. But, like, you're in charge, Clark. And
Which is interesting because Monty, you know, is usually on the side of, like, make sure we deserve to survive. But he, like...
Right. But, like, I mean...
He was in survival mode at that point, you know?
He was in survival mode. And I think, like, all of them had kind of realized at that point, like, they're never going to stop, you know? Yeah. So, and also at that point, they see that Jasper is in the dorm room and think that he's been captured. Because again, like, this is part of Jasper's plan to, like, get close to Cage and stab him in the neck, I guess. But, like, they don't know that. So, like, Monty just thinks, like, Jasper's been captured, you know. And then, like, Cage immediately goes in and is like, put Abby on the table next. And Clark's like, what? I could never have foreseen this. After I just killed your father, you're going to kill my mother? What?
How dare you?
So, like, that's happening, you know, and it basically just seems like, yeah, everything is falling apart. Everything is lost. And that's when Clark is like, I have to do it then. And then Bellamy, like, puts his hand over hers and is like, we'll do it together. Like, we will take joint responsibility for this, which is... So good.
Right? Never has genocide been so romantic.
So, yeah. So they pull the lever together, and everyone who is not able to handle radiation just starts getting covered in sores and dying.
Which is, like, also peak 100, because it's like, you know, they set it up with the kids. And the, you know, revolutionary people, like, your normal TV show watching brain is like, okay, they're going to find a way out of this. Like, there's no way they're going to kill kids. Yeah. And then the 100 is like, oh, no, we're going to for sure, like, irradiate some children right now. Like, yeah. Oh, it's so brutal.
Yeah. And then, so in the aftermath of that, basically Jasper realizes what's happening. And he's like... Maya. Oh, fuck. And he goes and finds her where she is with... that's the other thing, is Octavia and Maya had gotten, like, spotted. So they're, like, you know, being pinned down. So they're also, like, you know, also part of Bellamy's decision, right? He literally says before he decides to pull the lever, like, my sister, my responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. If I don't do this, she's gonna get shot. So Jasper goes and finds Maya... And is, like, holding her while she's dying and says, like, you know, she was innocent. Like, she didn't do anything wrong. And Maya's dying words are, none of us is innocent. Which is peak 100 and so good.
So good. Right? Because, like, you know, especially with her background and, like, the way she grew up, like, you know, her mother chose to die instead of take blood from people, but, like, she's right. alive, so she's chosen to take blood from people. Like, she's known her entire life that her existence isn't innocent, that none of the people, that anyone that she knows, they are not innocent.
Yeah.
It's like, just, oh, it's so...
And also, even, like, again, I don't know that this was like her intention when she was saying the words, but just that can be like expanded to everyone. You know, it's like no one living in Mount Weather was innocent because they were all complicit in this terrible thing that was happening. But also, like, none of the 100 are innocent either. None of the Arcadians are innocent. Like, they've all done terrible things or been complicit in terrible things in order to protect themselves and the people they love.
One quick aside before we move on. There's this really cool moment with, like, I don't know why, but, like, I'm, like, so geeking. I've always loved Octavia, but, like, I'm just so into her storyline now, just knowing, like, where it goes. It's so wild. But, like, I've been paying, like, extra attention to her. And, you know, there's this moment where, you know, they have that one guard that's on their side, and he comes in. He, like, immediately points his gun at Octavia because she looks like a grounder. And he goes, like, oh, it's an outsider or whatever. And Monty's like, she's not an outsider. And Octavia goes, yes, she is. And, like... When I first saw that, I just thought it was like, oh, you know, she identifies more as a grounder now than as, like, a sky person or whatever. But then, like, looking back on it, it's like, I think she, like, she's been an outsider her entire goddamn life.
Right. It's the, like, the word outsider specifically.
Yes. Like, she, yeah, she doesn't belong to anyone or anything, like, except for Bellamy and, like, Lincoln to a certain extent. Like, she, yeah, like, she very much sees, like, specific people as, like, her people, right? She's very fluid in who she thinks she is, who she thinks she belongs to. And, like, that's just so cool because, yeah, she's, like, was always an outsider on the Ark because she was illegal. And then she was, like, still pretty much, like, an outsider when they got to the ground because she was trying to, like, work with Lincoln and the grounders, and they're like, that'll never work. And, like, she was always against, you know, war with them. And, yeah, and then, like, yeah, and then she was an outsider with Indra and her crew until she, like, got in with them, and then she was betrayed by them, and she's, yeah, she's just constantly on the edges of groups of people, and I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, anything else you want to say before we leave Mount Weather?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, just some wrapping up things. So, I mean, so, like, Jasper feels just, like, completely abandoned, and it's also very upsetting to see this knowing how Jasper's character arc goes.
But he never recovers from this.
He's never going to recover from this. And the fact that he's like, he says to Monty, like, how could you let this happen? Like, you know, he's just completely abandoned because, like, even Monty, his best friend, like, allowed Maya to die. Even though, like, you knew for sure by this point that Maya was willing to die for this cause. Like, she had said that multiple times, but still. Then, Cage tries to escape, but Lincoln finds him in the woods, and just this incredible scene where then Cage tries to, like, use his Reaper, you know, conditioning against him, or, like, uses the tone generator and tries to inject him with a drug, but then Lincoln, like, resists it, chops off his hand, and then injects the drug into Cage, and it's so, like, so cathartic to see this terrible man punished in exactly the way that, you know, him, his regime was responsible for hurting so many people for so long.
It was so satisfying.
Absolutely. And then everyone returns to camp except that Clark won't go in.
Ugh, kills me. That whole, I remember watching the scene so vividly. Like, you know, it's her and Bellamy, and they're alone, and they're talking, and he's like, please just come in. Like, please. Like, he's begging her, basically, like, please just come in. Like, if you need forgiveness, I'll give you that. Like, you are forgiven. I was just like, oh my god, this is so good. And, like, you think for sure they're gonna kiss. Like, okay, I can be fine with Clark leaving if he's gonna kiss him. But then, no, they hug, they do the cheek kiss, and... And she has to be all stoic, and I bear it, so they don't have to, and all of this.
I mean, it's so good, right? Because she's like, I can't go in there, I can't rejoin society, like, I'm responsible for this terrible thing. And Bellamy is just like you said, like, if you need forgiveness, like, I'll give it to you. You're forgiven. Like, we did this together. Like, it's on both of us. Like, you can, you know... And it's, and also just, like, the performances in this scene, like, both of them were so good. And yes, and then it's like, they do, she just kiss him on the cheek, which is still a big move. Big move. long way from whatever the hell we want, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
It's the biggest move so far between them. But, But yeah, and then she just walks off into the woods on her own to go live with her guilt.
Oh, man. So heavy. Oh, and like when, so Jasper comes in and Raven says, like, oh, I almost forgot, like, here are your goggles. And it's like, oh my God, like, he is so far from the kid he was when he was wearing those. Like, how is this only season two?
I know. So much has happened.
Oh, it's so good. Okay. Do you want to talk about Jahan Murphy now?
Yeah. So, episode starts out, and they're still rowing across the ocean. And they're getting demoralized, but then they see land, they see a light, and they're like, woohoo. And at this point, it's down to Jaha, Murphy, and two other guys.
Random.
So they're rowing. And then they get attacked by some sort of sea monster. And one of the guys just, like, falls over and gets, you know, ate up by the sea monster. And the other guy is freaking out. His name is Craig, as you said. And Craig is like, oh my God, where is it? Like, what happened to the guy? Oh my God, we're all gonna die. And there's like a hole in the boat now. And he's like, it's gonna sink. And meanwhile, Jaha is like, row. Like, you gotta row the freaking boat. Like, we have to get out of here. Row the boat. And he's freaking out. And so Jaha just stands up and pushes this guy out and just sacrifices him to the sea monster. Murphy is like, what the fuck is going on?
And like, I just hate Jaha so
I mean, much. Yes, that's established and it continues to be true. Yes.
Yes, he's just a bad person. Like, God. Oh, great scene. But
yeah.
Terrible person.
Yes. So, I mean, so then the two of them do eventually make it to land. And then once they do, Murphy's basically just like, I'm not following you anymore. Like, fuck you for what you did to Craig. And while I fully agree that what Jaha did to Craig was unconscionable, I am always curious about what Murphy's moral stance on things are.
Exactly. Me too. Because that also seems very flexible.
Right. Because it's like, Murphy has killed people, and the reasons that Murphy has killed people has either been, like, self-defense, okay, or just, like, you tried to kill me in the past. It's just been revenge, right?
Uh-huh.
So, like, he feels like murder is justified when it's for revenge and not when it's for, I mean, like, Jaha's plan basically was, like, oh, we'll sacrifice him to the sea monster and then we'll get away because he's just freaking out. He's not useful to us. Which I agree is fucked up, but like, I don't really understand why Murphy. I guess Murphy is like, oh, he didn't have it coming for him or something.
Right, like is that deserve to die sort of thing?
Right. Like, yeah, like Murphy does believe some people deserve to be murdered, but not, you can't just sacrifice people for your own survival or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, also plot, because they will have to end up in different places, right? Murphy has to end up in this tower.
Yeah, he founds this, like, cool, modern bunker. Which, again, I love, you know, I just love that just visual shock, right?
Yeah.
Of seeing Murphy bloody, dirty, in ratty clothes, walk into this, like, you know, really nice, fancy, modern-looking room with, like, electricity. And he, like, pours himself some, like, brandy.
Start the nutritious crackers or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he watches this. He somehow turns on this camera on this man who's talking about, like, you know, she did it. She, whoever she is, which, you know, we learn is Allie, probably. I can't remember. But, you know, she got the launch codes. Like, you know, she did it, but it's my fault. And then he shoots himself in the face.
Yeah.
And, like, in that bunker, I'm pretty sure is where he does that. So Murphy's like, the fuck?
Yeah.
Which the timestamp on that, video is 2052, which is not that far away. Like, not far enough away as I would like it to be. Like, we would be alive. We would be, like, 56, 57 if that happens.
Yeah, that's funny because I feel like it's been established, like, right, so the like nuclear apocalypse happened 97 years before the start of the show. Like, that's established. But I feel like it also at some point seemed implied that like I feel like Raven mentions like, oh, that thing that happened in like, you know, 2148 or like, I feel like there in the past has been mentioned that like, no, there was even before that apocalypse, there were like a couple more centuries from the modern day. But so maybe it's a plot hole or maybe I'm just remembering wrong.
Yeah, so that happens. And then we get to Jaw.
Uh-huh.
And he finds this weird mansion mm-hmm. on a hill on this island. He walks in and he sees this. It's, again, you know, that's shocking. It's a very modern setting. It's clean and he's dirty. And he meets this woman. His name is Allie. And she's creepy as fuck. And I can't remember what she starts saying to him.
So basically the first thing she says when he... I watched this episode literally like 40 minutes before we started recording. Oh. So very fresh in my memory. He comes in and it's empty and he's looking around. And then like from behind him, you hear someone say like, oh, Thelonious, it's so good to see you. Mm. And so it's like she knows his name. And then she's talking about like these things that she knows, like... You came down to Earth and like I've, you know, been watching your journey, like you've this is your, you know, this is the path you're on, this is your destiny, whatever. And he figures out that she's a hologram. And he's like, you're not real. And she's just kind of like, it depends on what you mean by real. And then she's like, oh, you brought I've known that you were meant to come here since the gift that you brought me. And then shows him, like you said, the missile that he traveled down to Earth in. And then she says something ominous like, we have a lot of work to do. Yeah. And then cut to black.
Yeah, which is just, I remember watching it for the first time, it's being like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
So confused.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, just the way that the seasons end, right? I mean, like, at the end of season one, we had just then, like, all of a sudden cut to them in the mountain, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, what is going on? Like, just this crazy change of what the plot is, what the conflict is. But it still feels like a logical next step. It still feels like part of the world, you know, once it's developed more.
Yeah, it's, yeah. It's sometimes hard to keep up with, but
yeah,
but we're damn sure gonna try.
Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts?
Not really. I think I'm I've said all I need to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think we pretty much covered everything. It's good stuff. I mean, it's bad stuff, but like, it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, how do we end these again?
I was waiting for you to start, because I think you start.
I think I just say, like, hey, folks, thanks for listening. Like that?
Yeah. Right. We'd like to thank Freemimbo and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet, at A Bit Much Podcast, abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com, abitmuchpodcast.blogspot.com.
And then quote?
I think we gotta say our names first and then quote.
Okay. I'm Megan still.
And I am still, after all this time, I remain Jenna.
All right, Jenna, I'm gonna hit you with my favorite quote from these episodes.
All right, I'm excited.
I liked you better before we had sex.
It's not a very nice thing to say to me, Megan.
Listen, you should have thought about that before you gave up the goods.
Okay, I'm ending this now.
Okay.